Good morning, everyone. We have a new Cross and Lotus Journal out, so I encourage you all to pick some up on your way out. Reading from the Dear Friends article. Dear friends, perfection is sought by everyone. Your ideal perfection may come in various forms, an ideal of health, beauty, style of life, business or profession, perfect fairness and justice, peace in the world, a green, no pollution world, etc. Your ideal of perfection may be varied, but the theme is consistent. You want the world to be perfect according to your standards. One of my standards of perfection is that I want everyone to practice the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. This rule is easily understood, and think how the world would change if everyone practiced this simple maxim. However, the evidence of this being practiced in the breach is all but too abundant when we look about at the news headlines and situations in our own lives. A common fallacy in our desire for perfection is that this quality is looked for in the physical body or in the world at large. The beautiful model on the front of the magazine is photographed in her prime with professional makeup and airbrushing effects to complete the look that all others may compare themselves to or to whom others are compared. Life simply does not look like that in reality, and even if it does, it does not last. This is the fallacy. The perfection of your body or the world cannot permanently exist, and that vain pursuit creates suffering. This is true for any perfection you look for in the world. Even a modest sense of perfection cannot last, having a home, family, a simple, secure world. And even if this dream is achieved, one day old age, disease, or death will disrupt it. The 80-year-old widow whose husband just died says with pain, "This is not how it is supposed to be." It is a cry of pain that we understand, but reality says this is exactly what happens to the body. The body comes and goes, as Krishna says in the Gita, chapter 2, verse 22. Like a man discards his worn-out clothes and wears new ones, so does the soul discard this body and acquire a new one. What are you to do with this quest for perfection, then? Are you to give up on it, cry out defeat, or become cynical? There are plenty of others who do. The problem is that we have misdirected our minds as to where perfection is to be found. Perfection is real, it is knowable, but it is not derived from this physical realm. Perfection can come only from the purity of the divine. There are traditions around the world that seek to invoke perfection through mystical rites. In India, there is bathing in the sacred waters of the Ganges in order to be purified, not just purity of the body, but of the spirit as well, a rite that came to Christian world through John the Baptist. This deeper cleansing of the soul was proven real to me when I was in India. Submersing myself in the Ganges took away a dark and pernicious feeling that had clung to me after an encounter with someone who practiced a dark tantric yoga. I know from my own experience that such a baptism can have a powerful healing effect. Yet I also know that there is a type of Ganges or a River Jordan that is much closer to you and easier to find. To find perfection, one must look beyond the body, and one does not need to travel to some distant river that gives a lift but cannot give it permanently. There is a river that flows constantly and is with you always. This river is referred to in 46 Psalms. There is a river that streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. This river that makes glad the city of God is the life force that flows to you constantly. The pranic life force flows from behind you into the back of your head, down the spinal column, and is distributed by the sub-power stations along the spine. Through deepened meditation, you can see, feel and hear the flow of the river of life force ever coursing through your whole body. You come to know it is the source of your ability to move, to think, and to have your being. As I write this to you, I hear the powerful word, Om Amen, resounding at the back of my head. I feel the commanding current flowing in the mouth of God at the back of my head. It illumines my brain cavity and tingles with vibrant life force. There's a more intense presence of it in the center of my forehead, and there is also an electrifying force up and down my spine. This life force also pervades my body from head to foot. Awareness of this pranic life force lifts me up beyond the limits of the physical body. It is vibrant, calm, and has great purity. It now rises to the top of the head and extends out a foot or more beyond the physical head, at the ajna, or the forehead, and the crown of the head. That life force now extends into all space. With this final union, the river of life force merges into an ocean of spirit, and it is all perfection. It turns conscious awareness into the city of God, the tabernacle of the Most High. When attention is once again turned to the activities of the world, I consciously feel that same life force flowing into the body and making locomotion, seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, smelling, excreting, organ functions and breathing, all possible. The life force forms itself into thoughts and words to be spoken or written, and as it does all of these marvelous activities, its signature is pure perfection. It seeks to express itself in the same frequency of perfection through all activities, and if there is any lack of harmony between that sacred life force and outward action, it is painful. It is an exacting master, and yet strange to say that by making myself a slave to it, its perfect instrument, I gain complete freedom in a way I never experienced when leading my life guided only by the whims of my mind and ego. So, I say with complete certainty, perfection does exist. Otherwise, the Master could not have said, "Be ye perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect." Matthew 5:48. Perfection comes from being in total accord with that sacred life force that is always flowing like a river from behind you, through you, and out to the world from you. Attune yourself with that sacred, mysterious force, and you will attain the perfection that Jesus and all the great ones have taught. Speaking of this perfection of spirit, it is simplicity itself to really begin to focus in on this inner calm, this inner flow. This world is always made up of mixed forces. Sometimes there is quiet, and sometimes there are dogs barking and people chatting, and there are demands on you. You have meditation time, and you have a perfectly wonderful time of it. And then somebody calls you, or you have to get engaged in business in some way, and your attention is drawn out into this world. And you see, that is where the trouble begins, is when our attention becomes exclusive to this world and we forget about God. We are told in the scriptures around the world that we should donate 10%, the first fruits of our labors and what we receive, to God. If you also apply this principle within you, that God is constantly pouring to you as life force, and if the first 10% you return back to God, that is, you keep your attention upon God no matter what else is happening to you in the world, and you feel that vibrancy, you feel that life force, And you never forget it. Even if your body is in pain these last several days, this body has been in pain of various sorts. And as I was, we were driving down this morning to come to service here, there's a tremendous pain in the back of my head. And I was feeling it, and I was thinking and merging that thought of pain in with the thought of God. It's an interesting thing to do, because pain can be so demanding that it's all that we fixate the mind upon when we feel it. But as I have said before, when I was at the ashram the first time in 98, 99, I felt there, I had Papa's teachings where he said pain and bliss are the same. And it's an interesting thing for him to say, because in the Gita it says pleasure and pain are the same. But Papa takes it to a different level. He says pain and bliss are the same. So as I was sitting this morning and I was feeling this pain at the back of my head and I was merging it in with the thought of God, I felt not only the pain, but I also felt the bliss of God, the presence of God, the peace of God. It's like two rivers that intermingle, and they become so intermingled you can't separate one from the other, but one is more powerful than the other. The bliss vibration is more powerful than the pain vibration. Now, you may still experience pain. I still feel that pain in the back of my head, but there it is. But it's filled with bliss now. And so it's an interesting thing to do, to find out the truth, if it is indeed the truth, that pain and bliss can be the same. So many of us are afraid to have any kind of pain in the body. But really, what we should be afraid of is losing the presence of God. Now, many people associate having pain with having lost the presence of God. But as I have proven within my own body, those two do not need to be simultaneous, that you have pain but you lose God's presence. You can have both. And when you have both, then you feel your connection with God. One of the things that pain and illness does is it makes us feel isolated and separated. Makes us feel isolated and separated first from other people. Somebody else can't know exactly what kind of pain that we're having. Perhaps they don't have empathy or any appreciation for it. And also, we feel separation from God. And as a result of that, we can have kind of a nice little pity party all by ourselves. And we feel that sense of isolation and separation, and it grows keener and more profound. The truth is, what we really fear is the separation of God. We just oftentimes don't realize it. And so if you can put your mind on God first, whatever physical condition this body is in, whether it's giving you pleasure or whether it's giving you pain, now, for other people, pleasure is the more difficult one. Perhaps you're sitting down and you're enjoying a meal and you're eating your food and you're fully concentrated upon enjoying everything about that food. Now, there's nothing wrong with enjoying the food that you have. You don't have to throw ashes in it or destroy the taste or flavor of it as an act of renunciation. The real act of renunciation is feeling God's presence even while you're eating. Now, for some people, this is difficult to imagine. It's all one or it's the other. And yet, if we can imagine giving at least 10% of our attention to God, even while we're eating and enjoying the food that we're having, we never lose that presence. Not only that, but we are guided by wisdom then to select the right foods to eat, not to overeat, and other types of attunement that brings us to. And so this practicing the presence of God is something that we can have with us all the time. Recently, we've been doing some construction down in the basement. And when I went down in the basement and I saw some of the work that had been done, and it's just wonderful. It's so pleasing to be able to see that. Now, if that pleasure of being pleased and seeing it overrides the sense of God, then when I see something else that displeases me, and I have also lost that sense of connection with God, now I'm on the merry-go-round of going up and down. I'm up if I'm pleased, and I'm down if I'm displeased. And as a result of that, the feeling of separation grows once again. So whether it's a professional life, or whether it's in our personal life, home life, you know, within relationships, relationships always have a dual nature, always. And even the people that we love the most in this life will sometimes drive us crazy. Little habits, little idiosyncrasies, little things that disappoint us along the way. And when you are on the merry-go-round of the up-and-down ride of that, it makes it very difficult. But the wonderful thing is that when you focus your mind on God first, then those little things pass you by. And they don't affect you as deeply and as profoundly as if you're completely and totally attached and identified with it. So these are very practical teachings. These are the ways to find balance in your life. Everybody has their own set of circumstances that they think are unique to them. And perhaps nobody else can understand it, but God can understand it. And the problem lies in when we think that God is someplace else, outside of us. But as this writing pointed out, when we feel that God is the life force that's flowing into us, I could not lift my hand, I could not speak a word, I could not think a thought, if that divine life force were not flowing through me at all times, I wouldn't be able to have a life at all. Withdraw that life force from me, and this body would fall down like a dead piece of meat, and it'd be thrown away, because it no longer holds the life force and the soul that once animated it. And it may come as news to some, but this happens to us all at one point or another. And the key, once again, even at the point of death, isn't do we feel a separation? Where are we going? We don't know where we're going. Do we have the presence of God? When you breathe that last breath, can you breathe it out and let your spirit expand with it and merge into omnipresence, omniscience, omnipotence? Now, if you have been practicing this all through your life and you know who and what you are, then at that moment of death, you will not have fear. You will not have limiting thoughts. But you just can't fake it and think, well, right at the last minute, I'll have the right thoughts. Because whatever is deep in the subconscious mind is going to come at that moment. And it's going to come like gangbusters. You're not going to be able to prohibit it. And whatever is residing unresolved within your own subconscious mind dictates what your future will be. And so if you have unresolved things about this world, people in this world, relationships in this world, then you will come back to this world in order to work all of those things out. When Jesus gave up the ghost, which is to say the human self, he commended himself to God. His total focus was being upon God. And so when he arose from that body, he merged into God consciousness. Now this is the way that we should be. But if we spend our time being identified with this body, have relationships and have situations in this life that we are unresolved about, then that is attachment. Now, it doesn't mean we don't want to improve ourselves. It doesn't mean that we don't want to make a better life for ourselves. Not at all. We go about making as much beauty, making as much of an environment and doing activities that creates a healthy, uplifting atmosphere for everybody concerned. But at that moment, when if God were to call us, we would surrender everything to him And we would feel that whoever it is who is dependent upon us or whatever we think that we have left to do, if God is calling us, then it is up to Him. It was His work from the very beginning. And it will be up to Him to finish that work if it is unfinished. And we surrender ourselves. We let ourselves go into His care. We release ourselves from everything that we have been doing. There are certain martial arts practices where people will be in the middle of their movements, of their katas. And the master will say, stop. And everybody who is in the middle of an activity, a motion, whether it's a kick or a hit or a swirling motion, whatever it is, stops right on a dime. If they're out of balance, when they stop, they'll fall over. But if they're in perfect alignment, they can stop and they can stand stock still right where they're at. It's a tough practice. But if spiritually we can take a lesson from that, it's that no matter what we're doing, as long as we have at least 10% of our attention upon God, and God calls stop, we can stop. When Papa was walking across the field, as God had commanded him to, and when he got halfway across, God told him to go around, turn around and go back. And obediently he did it. He was God's slave. And this was the great lesson that he was teaching at this time. That complete and total obedience, no attachment. Attachment is only to God. And the feeling of God's presence and the desire to attain that. And once having attained it, then to guard it. Many times we can be in an uplifted state. But as you go along in your life, you can get a little cavalier about it. You can get careless with it. Because it's coming to you easily now. You're feeling God's presence. It's flowing through you. And so you start to play with it a little bit. You start to deviate. Well, you seem to get away with it. And so the deviation begins to create more deviation. And then suddenly you're in a state of separation and you wonder what you did to yourself. Why did God withdraw Himself from you? And the fact is, God did not withdraw Himself at all. But rather, you have withdrawn yourself from God. We have been studying this wonderful Bhagavad Gita. Next week we have a class. But I thought I would read some here from Master's writings in chapter 4. God could produce Jesus Christ and Babaji's by the thousands, by direct materialization or via the ordinary embryonic creation, and could have them act out their sacred lives as divine puppets. But could such beings, lacking past personal experience of the intricate compulsions of sense temptations, serve realistically as exemplars to teach human beings the art of conquering flesh allurements by natural human methods of self-control? Devotees admire Christ because He came among men as one of them. He was humanly tempted, and He suffered at the hands of persecutors. He overcame all human ordeals by will, effort, and love for God. A sacred puppet acting out a divine drama of temptation and victory would be only a spurious actor on the stage of life. But a human being who becomes a master is a spiritual artist who can show other fellow beings how to destroy evil and become divine. The soul of an ignorant being and a master are the same in essence and are perfect. Did you hear that? The soul of an ignorant being and of a master are the same in essence and are perfect, even as the one moon's reflection appearing distorted in pots of agitated and muddy water, or undistorted in calm and clear water, are reflections of the same object, the moon. When the water pot is muddy and agitated by a breeze, the moon reflected there appears distorted, even though it is not so in reality. Muddy minds, agitated with the restlessness caused by the attributes of nature, similarly cause a seeming distortion of the soul. When by yoga meditation the muddied mind of ignorance settles, restlessness disappears, the clear soul is manifest. Just think, residing within you is the same kind of spirit, the same kind of purity that Jesus and Krishna and Rama and Buddha, of Master, of Mother, of all the great saints and all the great masters, it is the same as they had, and it's residing right within you. And yet, what do we occupy our minds with? Do we dwell upon that? Do we meditate upon that? Do we search that out with all of our hearts, minds, and souls? As the moon's reflection may be distorted beyond recognition in swirling water, so the soul's reflection grossly distorted in a materialistic man. As the moon is recognizably reflected in slightly agitated clear water, or perfectly reflected in calm, completely calm clear water, so enlightened souls are either partial or full manifestations of God. A calm, clear water in various pots reflects perfectly the same shining moon, so all liberated souls manifest the same pure essence. When pots are broken and the water released, the reflected images that appear to be confined to the various pots become one with the moon whose light is spread all over the earth. Similarly, all liberated masters who can separate their reflected souls from their bodies at will and yet live in bodily forms are perfect and equal soul images of God. There is a delusive difference in the appearance, but when they dematerialize their bodily confinements, they are the same one omnipresent spirit. Dogmatic disciples with their little minds strive to represent their own particular master as greater than other masters. Who may say with authority, "My master is fully liberated incarnation of God"? Only he who has true intuition and is himself perfected in the wisdom of God attunement. Anyone who says, "My master is the greatest incarnation of God," or "the only liberated master," is unquestionably ignorant. The yardstick of judging fully liberated masters possessed only by fully liberated disciples. A liberated disciple is completely loyal to his master, the guru, who has shown him the way to liberation, but he always respects other avatars and masters. Masters and disciples have achieved self-realization after wandering through various bypaths of beliefs. Love of all saints as one in God. Ignorant disciples trying to glorify a certain avatar as supreme over other avatars instead belittle their master through their bigotry, intolerance, hate, inquisitions, crusades, and religious wars. In omnipresence, there is no labor foreman, no president, no servant, no great, greater, and greatest. All are equal and one with the Spirit, a joyous conclave of divine amity. So let us seek out perfection and keep it with us always. Whatever the disturbances, whatever the cries that come out in life, whatever the desire natures are that are working inside of us, let us keep God's presence as our most sacred treasure, something never to be forgotten, something never to be lost hold of. In closing with a quote from Papa on the back page, "Man's quest is eternal happiness, which is same as God. He is active in various fields of action in pursuance of this object. But by whatever he strives for happiness, he progresses towards the very fountain of happiness, God. The man who works for the fruit, keeping in view the object of sense enjoyment as the sole aim, still struggles unconsciously towards the immortal seat of bliss, God. Let us be conscious aspirants. This practicing the presence of God, this finding perfection dwelling within you, not because the body or the mind has become perfect in a human sense, but because you are attuning yourself to that already perfect spirit that is dwelling within you. And through your attunement and dwelling upon that one lovely spirit, you will be liberated. You will be freed from all the things that do not live in accord with that perfection. Perfection is your inheritance. Perfection is your right. Perfection is your true state of being. May you know it now and always. If you'll pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Amen. Pranams, I bow to the light within you.